Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert Tom Holowach. Tom was the manager of Balloon Fest 86. He has been doing special event logistics since 1978. Tom recently retired and is now a screenwriter. Let's hear what he has to say about Balloon Fest 86. Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's fun to be here, Rebecca.
So could you tell our listeners how you got involved in the balloon spectacle business?
Yeah, it was a thing that happened in the 80s. The 80s were kind of a go-go time, if you recall. It was, you know, like, you know, greed is good. And corporations got into doing big special events. In fact, the special event business was kind of created in the 80s. And a lot of it was an offshoot of stuff that was being done that you saw on TV. And the 84 Olympics in LA was kind of a key turning point. No one had ever seen anything like the opening and closing ceremonies of the 84 Olympics. It was just pure spectacle. And people just loved that kind of stuff. They loved seeing one-of-a-kind events that they'd never see again. And so I actually got to know the man who was behind doing the balloon release at the 84 Olympics. And he was looking for people who were good with logistics and who just could take a hold of the thing and run. And that was really my lane. And I had been doing audiovisual presentations and doing events and things like that. So I started working with him on the 84 Olympics. And once we had gotten that out of the way, it was a seemingly impossible challenge and it went off perfectly. And not only did we see that, but a lot of other people saw that. And the special events business sort of started in that area. They even started a magazine called Special Event Magazine. They started to have an annual conference where they gave out awards. And I ended up working with them on helping them produce their award ceremony. So it was a very interesting time across the country to see people just throwing, frankly, a ton of money at spectacle, trying to top the previous spectacle that someone had done. So it was an interesting time to be in that business, and LA was sort of the heart of it, being an entertainment capital, having a lot of Disney people, ex-Disney people around Disneyland, and the people who work for Disneyland are an important part of the story.
Yes. Could you tell us what it was like designing the Disney event, and how was it different than the Cleveland event?
The Disney event was basically born out of the Disneyland wanting to do something absolutely spectacular for their 30th anniversary. It was a big year. They had done some things in the park for the 25th, and they actually knew Treb Heining, the man who designed the event, because he had actually sold balloons at Disneyland when he was a teenager.
Wow.
He has this whole backstory going with them. And so he would do a lot of decor for them already, in the park for their events. And he's the man who invented the balloon spiral, which you see, stacks of balloons clustered together. It's a weird thing to think about, but no one had ever done balloons tied together like that before him. He invented that. And so Disneyland used him a lot, and they turned to him and said, "We want to do something spectacular. And we're thinking of doing a balloon release that's all colors of the rainbow on Catella Boulevard in front of Disneyland in honor of our 35th anniversary, or the 30th anniversary, I'm sorry." And so they turned to Treb, and because we'd already done the 84 Olympics and that was thought to be impossible, they said, "Well, we're thinking about doing a million balloons. You think you can do that?" It was like, "Oh, yeah, sure." But it became less about decor and more about logistics. Mm. Literally, we had to approach it as though it were military event, a military invasion, because helium, when put into a balloon, only lasts a certain amount of time. The molecules actually leak through the latex in the balloon. So it only has a shelf life, so to speak, of a few hours before it starts to lose its lift. So it's like a calculation. It's like, okay, if we want to do a million balloons, we need X number of people blowing up balloons at X number of balloons per minute in order to get this. And then we have to release them within X hours after they're blown up. And then you say, how's that possible? So what we did is, and I can't take the credit for this, a friend of both of ours named Bill Schaffel, created something we called the balloon bin at that point. And what it was an upside down funnel. So you would get people inflating the balloons. First of all, to create a system to inflate balloons, you literally had to create a grid. Imagine what you might put in a house to plumb a house. We had copper piping that had valves every few feet, and the valve was zip tied to a milk crate that we borrowed from a dairy. And then we had four folding seats around it. And then we had kids from high schools blowing the balloons, knotting them, and just letting them go. And they would go up to the top of the funnel. And at the top of the funnel, we had like a latch, so to speak. It was actually a gate that we would pull and the balloons would go through. And we got plastic tubes, not unlike the kind of thing that you get your stuff back from the dry cleaner in. And we figured out how big those had to be. And we tied off one end and we put the other end over the funnel. And we would pull the latch and it would fill with balloons. And we'd tie it off and hand it to someone to go and weight down somewhere. So it was literally an assembly line.
Wow.
For balloons. And no one had ever done anything like that. And it had nothing to do with decor. It was 100% about logistics.
Wow. So what was the idea for the Cleveland event?
Well, the Cleveland event was born from the need for the United Way in Cleveland to do something to raise money for the United Way, which they had always done. They had always gotten the school kids involved in something. I mean, not a bake sale per se, but the kids had always been able to raise money at school in order to make money for the United Way every year. And the United Way saw that Disney event, and the light bulb went on over somebody's head there and said, what if we did the same kind of a thing here in Cleveland, except we broke that record? What if we did 2 million balloons?
Wow.
And it was a real record. And instead of And what we'll do is we'll have the kids go out and sell like balloons, chances to a balloon, inflate a balloon for two balloons for a dollar. And you can even write your name on a slip of paper and stick it inside the balloon, and we'll see how far it goes. I mean, this is something which appeals to the child and everybody, number one. I mean, how cool is that? It's like a message in a bottle kind of a thing, you know? And the other thing about Cleveland is Cleveland had probably the worst reputation of any major city in the United States. It was called the Mistake on the Lake. Cleveland at that point was known as the city that had the river that caught fire, period. If you said Cleveland to anyone, that would be the first thing they thought of.
Wow. Yeah.
And so the city fathers were all behind it. The level of cooperation that was given to the United Way and eventually to us by everyone in the city of Cleveland from the top down was absolutely stunning.
So what were some of the regulations and requirements around creating the event?
Well, number one, we had to get permission from the FAA for the airspace. The site for the event was a place called Terminal Tower, downtown Cleveland. And if you look at it in a picture, it looks kind of like a mini version of the Empire State Building. And it's on a square, which had just been turned into like a wonderful public space. Back in the 80s, they were starting to do fun things with public spaces and urban renewal. And they were like taking bricks and bricking things and making freeform steps and gardens. And it was meant to be a beautiful public space. And it was actually graced by a statue of Moses Cleveland, who the city of Cleveland is named after. So it began as a logistics challenge to figure out, okay, how are we going to do this differently than we did it in Disneyland? Because we looked at it and we said, there's no way that we can do 2 million balloons using the technique that we did in Disneyland. It just didn't pencil out. There was no way we could get that many people.
Yeah. So I'm just curious about the preparations. Maybe you could walk us through the night before and the day of the event, how it all unfolded.
Well, the preparations for the event started months in advance, figuring mm-hmm. out how we were going to do this. So instead of creating a bunch of balloon bins where the balloons went out the top into tubes, we basically turned all of Terminal Tower Square, a city block, into a balloon bin. So we created a structure that had sides made out of scaffolding, heavy duty scaffolding. And then there were tarps that were wrapped around the outside of the scaffolding. And then on top of the scaffolding was a one piece net, so that the balloons, which naturally want to go up in the air, instead of going up and going into a funnel, they went up into this giant net. And the lift on a balloon is a calculable thing. It's like, it's weird. I ended up using all this math stuff that I never thought I would use. But you can approximate how many balloons that, you know, you can do per hour. And then you can calculate what the lift of the helium in a single 9-inch party balloon is, and then multiply that out and figure out what the lift at any given point is going to be. And it was a lot. And we talked to architects about this. This wasn't anything that we threw together. And so in the preparation for this, we're meeting with the city, and the city planner said to me, you know, even though this is a temporary structure, for safety reasons, we have to conform to the actual building code of any building you're going to put up. I said, okay, what does that mean? He said, well, the most important thing for you is that all buildings, permanent buildings, have to withstand a 90 mile per hour wind. And I said, you expect a temporary scaffold covered with blue tarps to withstand a 90 mile per hour wind? He said, yep, gotta be. So at that point, the thing almost got canceled. So I said, no, I'm the kind of guy who looks at stuff like that as a challenge. And I said, no, we'll figure it out. So I actually found an architect in Cleveland, and I went to him with this thing, and I said, all right, we have to factor in wind loading and figure out how to make this happen. You're a licensed civil architect, civil engineer. Is it possible? And he looked at it and he said, yes, you just have to make horizontal bridge trusses as well as vertical ones. So the night before, well, we started erecting the scaffold about a week before. And then we put down this network of copper tubing. And like I said, in each balloon bin, we had, you know, it was like a zigzag path of copper tubing. But the copper tubing was hooked up to a larger pipe, which then went back to an entire tractor trailer full of helium. Wow. Now, helium is stored in one place in this country, massively. It's stored in all salt mines in Texas. And so we ended up getting three tractor trailers full of helium filled up in Amarillo, Texas, and brought up and then hooked into this high pressure line, because they had to, you know, it had to get pushed through at pressure in order to do all the inflation. And there's a, they had to have regulator valves and all that. So that was all very scientific too. And then, you know, we cable tied the sides onto it, and we were all getting ready to go. And then the night before the event, I've been on the phone with the National Weather Service. Now, we're all pretty used to having our cell phones now where we have like a radar app. Right. We all know what Doppler radar looks like. You know, it's like, oh, Doppler radar says this is coming in, and we can all see what it looks like on our own phones. But in 1986, it was not that well known. And matter of fact, very few cities in the country even had Doppler radar. But as it turned out, Cleveland Hopkins International Airport had Doppler radar. So I got the personal desk phone number of the guy at the Weather Service at the airport and said, okay, we've got to be, you know, watching out for the weather. You know, can I call this line? We didn't have cell phones either. That's the other thing.
Right.
Didn't even have the big Motorola bricks that came around later. So we actually had the phone company put in like an office line. We had six phone lines. And so I was on the phone a lot with the Weather Service, and the night before this was happening, or the day before this was happening, the weather guy said to me, you need to know that there's a serious, serious squall line coming in. And it is the kind of thing that might spawn tornadoes. And so we did stop working and go inside. And sure enough, the thing that hit us was, it looked, I've never seen a tornado in person. I've seen video of it. This acted like a tornado, but it wasn't a hugely destructive thing. And as it turns out, the definition of it is it's a microburst tornado. It's something that just swoops down and it hits a very small area, and it tore the heck out of the bin. We went out and looked after it had passed, and the tarps were torn. The net had holes in it on top. And so the people from United Way, we met in a little back room, and we had an office, and they came and said, well, obviously we have to call it off. I've got to let everybody know. And my boss, Treb, was saying, yeah, he said, I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is literally the first event we've ever had to cancel. And there are two other guys who were there with me. One was the guy who had built the copper plumbing for the helium, and the other guy was the guy who did the tarps. And we looked at each other, and one guy, Walt, said, well, you know, I brought spare tarps. I'm never one to chance anything. So I actually think I've got enough spare tarps to rewall the whole thing. And Bill Schaffel had looked around and said, I don't see any major problems with the copper. It just, it knocked all the chairs down, and it knocked over some of the milk crates. But I think that the copper plumbing system is intact. And I said, well, the net has got some big holes in it. And we actually had a cherry picker that we had used to put the net on the first place. It was 110 foot crane. As a matter of fact, I'm the one who got to use it. So I went up and I started weaving the net together like a sailor. I felt like something out of Hemingway. But we managed to weave the net together in the middle of the night. And we said, okay, we can do this. So don't call it off. So that's where we stood the night before.
Wow. So can you walk us through the actual event? So, you know, the next morning we have all of the high school students who showed up, and I from what I recall, it went, you had to release them earlier. Is that correct?
The high school students showed up at, I'm trying to think now. One of the things, logistical things you have to do when you're planning a temporary balloon factory with 2,500 people in it, is you've got to have porta potties for them. You have to feed them, and you have to give them water. And as an added bonus, I found a DJ in Cleveland. So when these kids arrived at 4 a.m., they got out of their buses, and there was a whole system for that. The buses arrive here, they drop off here, they go and they park here. And the kids came in and they started blowing up the balloons, and we were doing really well. We actually had a representative from Guinness Book of World Records there, because we said that this is definitely going to be bigger than the Disneyland event. And so there was actually a formula for figuring out how many balloons really went up, because balloons would pop as you blew them up sometimes. That's just, there's a certain amount of wastage. And so we actually had people whose job was nothing more than picking up pieces of balloons that had popped on the ground so that we could account for them. And so the kids start blowing, and the net is starting to rise, and it's an amazing thing to see. It was like an amoeba. It was just started slowly growing and rising. So here we are, and I'm finally at the point where I'm going to say it's about 8 a.m. And I finally said, I think this is going to work. I mean, that's how close it was.
Yeah,
and then
I got on the
phone with the weather service, and the guy said, look, Tom, I got to level with you. There's another squall line on the way. It's not as bad as the one the other day. It's not a danger of tornadoes or microbursts or anything, but it's got some serious rain potential, and it's got some serious wind behind it. So we're trying to time it, and on the Doppler radar, you know, they do one every minute or so, and you can look at it and you can kind of calculate. And our release was supposed to be at 2, and he said, by my crude calculations, this thing is going to be right on top of you at 2. And if that amount of rain had come down on top of the balloons, they wouldn't have gone off. So I said, what time do you think we should go? And he said, frankly, the sooner you can do it, the better.
It was coming. It was looming.
And so we just had to make the announcement to everyone. And there were 2 million people downtown. I mean, this is the biggest event that happened since VJ Day in 1945, when everybody turned out. And so we had, you know, speakers, and we made announcements to people and said, okay, people, get your cameras ready, because we're going to release a little bit early. And so they were all set, and we pulled the rip cords. We cut down the cords that were holding three sides of the net. The whole thing was intended so that three sides would release, and then the one edge of the net would just fly up, and it would hold on, and the rest of it would fly up. And we had big weather balloons tied to the ends of the net so that they would pull the net up. And it all worked. Yeah, it worked perfectly. And then slowly the rain came in. Now, the good news is that it was not torrential rain. It was a pleasant rain. It was, you know, it was sort of a nice shower, and people were down there and they were getting wet, but they didn't really care. But it made the balloons wet, and it made them heavy. And then they started to sink. One of the things that happened is, this is the only really specific case that I can cite that I know is true, where some balloons came down in a pasture. And there was a thoroughbred horse ranch. They bred quarter horses. And a couple of the horses got upset about it and just started running around and apparently injured themselves. They were kicking out or something like that. Injured their legs by kicking the wood on the fence or something like that. Uh-huh. I don't have the details. But that was the one specific thing The lady who owned those horses was quite upset and eventually did bring a suit against the United Way, which she won, but it was for a few thousand dollars. But that is literally the only disastrous thing that happened. And so that's why I wanted to talk to you guys, because it's always been discussed as, oh, this is a disaster. And in my mind, it was an incredible triumph over adversity, because we could have quit. We should have quit any number of times. Any reasonable person would have said, oh, screw it. I'm not going to deal with this. There's no way this can happen. But we did it. And to this day, it's one of the high points in my career, because it's not so much that it had to do with balloons. It's that, damn it, I was not going to quit. I was not going to fail. The one thing that we're sorry for, and I really want to put this in, is the fact that that tornado that came through the night before, there were two fishermen who decided to go out on Lake Erie, and they didn't have any life-saving jackets. And they were out on Lake Erie during that microburst that I experienced. And if they had gotten caught in that, there's no way that they could have not capsized. And if they didn't have life vests, there's no way they could have survived. And I'm sorry for that. And I know that people say, because the balloons were floating on the water, that we prevented the Coast Guard from finding them. But later investigations by the Coast Guard proved that they probably had capsized hours and hours before in the overnight hours. And, you know, anytime a human tragedy happens like that, you don't want it to have happened. But I honestly don't believe that there was a connection. And so, I mean, I feel good about that. I just feel bad about the fact that that happened to those people. But I know that if I had been in a boat and gotten hit by what I got hit by down in Terminal Tower that night, it would have just knocked me off anything that I possibly could have been standing on. So I'm sorry for that.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Tom. It's been, you know, very interesting finding, you know, learning about the whole and the entire process. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're very welcome. It's nice to talk to you. I'm a big fan of sinkholes and giant toads. So, hey, nice to meet you.
Same.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
So, I mean, it's interesting to have someone who was actually on the ground of an event, mm-hmm. right? I feel like we never get to...
This is a first.
Right. I mean, there... We did... This was a while back, Clayton, but we did speak to the NASA...
Yes.
Guest expert who had, but it's very odd. He was part of
the design team that built the rocket boosters.
Yeah. But other than that, there really have been so few.
Right.
So it's just so interesting to actually hear an account mm-hmm. of how not only it was, you know, designed, but also how it, you know, felt at the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. And especially somebody who has such a detailed memory of everything that happened on that day.
I kept thinking, like, the reminder of, like, we didn't have cell phones. I'm like, God, but imagine logistics back in the day when, like, it was, like, just walkie-talkies and, you know, like, calling the guy at the Doppler station, like, on a landline.
That's so true. I kept thinking the same thing. I was like, God, life without cell phones was so dangerous.
An extra hurdle to jump through when you can't just call someone up and say, hey, is that thing secure over there? You just have to run and check it.
And that'll take you a few minutes if it's mm-hmm. far away, you know?
Precious time.
And also not having, you know, the weather app on your phone, mm-hmm. I'll never take you for granted, you know, dear weather app. I'll never take you for granted from now on.
Now, I missed the main body episode of this historic disaster. What did you guys end up blaming?
So
tell us, Clay.
What we ended up settling on or putting in jail again was the show must go on mentality, which we have discussed in previous episodes. Mm. And we gave the Cleveland rebrand the big slap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It feels like from what Tom was saying that Cleveland was really on board.
Right. It seemed like they were so desperate for this rebrand. And you said, like, you know, that their cooperation was like unprecedented, which seems like really... the result of a city that feels so, you know, like tarnished and desperate to be cool again, that they're like, we don't care if maybe it's a little irresponsible, like whatever you guys think.
Yeah, it really, they, you know, it's, you feel for Cleveland, I guess, that we're going mm-hmm. through some hard times. Hmm. But I still feel like the show must go on mentality is a big part of the event. I also, you know, we took the 80s off the board really soon. I feel like maybe that should have been on for a little longer.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the tidbits, Tom gave us so many, but one of the good tidbits he gave us was that special events started in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
You never really think about that. Like, what is a special event and what? When
and these spectacles
start?
Too, and, not just like special events, like spectacles, truly spectacles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The spectacles pop up now and again on The Alarmist because we just say, what is it really worth the risk? When there's mm-hmm. any kind of risk involved, is it worth it? I mean, in this case, I don't know what you had. What
I mean,
you guys
with
discussed
this case,
about the fishermen and the connection, but it seemed like it was more about them not being able to do a search and a proper search and rescue, as opposed to the balloons being directly responsible for this fisher. These
and we did talk about, I would say Mother Nature is a big part of this. It's like, you know, there's an argument to be made that if it wasn't for this kind of extreme squall or weather event, everything could have gone pretty smoothly. It could have been a huge release, just like in Disneyland. Mm-hmm. And there wouldn't be kind of some of the damage that happened to like the local farmers or it hindering like a search and rescue. So, you know,
the weather. Yeah.
You just never know with mom nature. Mom's going to
mom.
Do what she's
got. Mom's got
do.
Her own agenda. She's got a lot to do.
Yeah.
You know, she's
her.
Very busy. Busy. It's so true. And I was going to go back to the 80s, just like the fact that, you know, corporations started to get involved with marketing campaigns, you know, I thought was interesting. Not to say that it hadn't happened in the past, but it's like now they had the money and they could do these like large scale events that, you know, marketing wasn't invented in the 80s, but I feel like it had a big moment.
Right. It's when it started taking steroids in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of the baseball players. True. Marketing took steroids as well.
That's right. And, you know, they didn't know about they didn't know about the latex, of course.
Right.
They thought it was biodegradable. It wasn't enough. You know, it's like it is biodegradable, but like years and years and years. After years and years,
I guess everything is biodegradable, right? The sun's going to explode in a few billion years. So
seems like we're living a life of like act, you know, do first or act first and then ask questions later. And now
very 80s.
Yeah. Now we're like, let's ask questions first and then maybe we'll do.
And maybe not do it. Maybe just pass on the whole thing.
So in retrospect, it seems like more, you know, risque and like spectacle. Which now I feel like everything has become so corporate that like, yeah, we're going to do a spectacle, but it's going to be for safety purposes planned. Not that, I mean, it sounded very planned out, like hearing him talk about like the tubing for the helium and
calculating the lift
so it doesn't like carry away the netting.
Yes,
like that's also
the
complicated.
Copper piping for helium. Bringing, you know, it's not just like a few helium tanks, you know, or you get from the party. So you rent from Party City, you know.
No, we
have to like bring it from Texas. I mean, logistically, it was
very complicated and complex.
But I think in terms of the episode, I feel like we could stick to what we have.
Sure.
I do wish we had kept the 80s on a little longer, but you know. This is what we're here for, to discuss.
Yeah.
So Clayton, before we go, how has it been going with the reviews? Because I know we were trying to get it up from, you know, we want to get more reviews and we want to raise the rating. So has there been a response?
You know what? I'm gonna have to check right now.
Yeah, because I don't want to say that the alarmies hard headed again. I don't want to say that. I really don't. So I was just curious.
Yes. Okay. Here's one. Okay, we're still at 4.4, which we're trying to address.
Right.
This is from WordStar. It says a refreshing convo for freaks. And it says, okay, so maybe they aren't quote experts, but that's the point. It's just people having fun and trying to deal with an obsession with tragedy. I can relate. Rebecca brings in the experts to explain the disasters, and that's always enlightening. So you learn something, which is nice, but the reason to come back is the banter between Rebecca, Clayton, Alex, those I forgot, and yes, even Chris, because it seems like I'm there in the room represented by their every person perspective. This podcast provides the answer we all want to know when something goes wrong. Who's to blame?
Nice.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That was a great synopsis.
And yes, he's right. We are... we are the every person perspective. We're not the guest. We're not the expert perspective for sure. So again, just a call to action for all of the alarmy out there that listens to our show. We're trying to raise our rating. Get if you go on Apple Podcasts, rate, review, subscribe, 5 stars, amazing. And we're so grateful for you guys. It really helps us to get the word out about our show and keep the mics on. So tune in next week. We are going to be discussing the Nepalese Royal Massacre.
Earios. Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.